Well, good morning from San Francisco. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, and this is the first live show that we have ever done. So I guess we should do a first quick check. Gabe, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
You are coming loud and clear.
Fantastic.
You know who's also here? I've got Joe Maitland in the room.
Hi. Cheers, Gabe. How are you?
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good.
I guess first of all, I should say that what we're trying to do with this show, our idea for doing a live show is, we tried to do, like, Gabe and I always do webcasts and stuff, but the webcasts are all so, I don't know, like, manufactured, you know? And, like, I'll be saying things like, oh, hey, what do you think of this? And Gabe's like, well, Brian, I think that, and it's all, you know, all scripted and whatever. So Gabe and I always have conversations with each other. Like, he'll be gone for, you know, I don't talk to him for a few days or whatever, and then we always catch up and talk about all this cool stuff, and we're like, man, we should record this. So that's kind of what we're doing. And then we actually realized that we can use Amazon Web Services and their Edge network and their streaming service and everything, and I think this show is costing us something like $4 an hour to stream out. So that's cool too. So that's the show. Joe, so the reason Joe is here is because I wake up today and it says Citrix bought cloud.com. And Joe is the executive editor of our Search Cloud Computing websites and our Tech Target websites, as well as you have an online video show also, Cloud Cover TV. Let me ask you, so Citrix buys cloud.com. I've never heard of cloud.com.
Yeah, right. What is cloud.com?
Yeah, no, nor's anybody really. So they're a three-year-old company out here in Silicon Valley. They kind of cut their teeth initially with software that's basically known as infrastructure as a service software. So you take a bunch of servers and storage, you plonk this software down on top of it, and you have an Amazon Web Services-like offering. There's a bunch of companies that they compete with. Eucalyptus is a really big known name here, run by Martin Mikos, the former MySQL guy. So that's, you know, a bit of a coup or a side angle to this story is that Citrix did not buy Eucalyptus, which is the bigger name here. I think the reason they went after cloud.com is the OpenStack software. So OpenStack is basically an open source version of infrastructure as a service. So anyone can pick it up. If you're a hosting company, you know, and you want to get in the cloud business, you want to compete with a, you know, Amazon type offering, you just grab the code, the OpenStack code. Cloud.com has merged its code base with OpenStack,
which is what Citrix is already all over OpenStack anyway, right?
Citrix is already over it, yeah.
That was a big thing at Synergy, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, and they announced, and so this is an interesting thing, they announced this thing called Project Olympus, which is their, was going to be later this year, their sort of commercial supported version of the OpenStack implementation. So the question now is, does Citrix just dump that now they've bought cloud.com, or, you know, what happens to a Project Olympus? So there was, you know, also interestingly, Simon Crosby's gone. So he left some big shoes to fill over on the data center and cloud side of the house at Citrix. So this is sort of a, you know, quick move by Citrix, I think, to keep the momentum that they've already started. And
well, someone in the chat room is suggesting that this is to compete with vCloud.
Yeah, it's like the open alternative to vCloud.
Okay. Well, so I got a bunch of questions. Like, So cloud.com has a software that if I want to start my own hosting company to compete against, you know, Amazon or whatever, I can buy this. But Amazon, like, they write all their own stuff. And they're Amazon. They're freaking huge. So, like, what chance in the world do I have of building something that can actually compete against them, especially if I have to license my whole infrastructure layer?
Yeah, slim. Well, OpenStack, remember, is free. So that's one thing you have. But you know, the other thing you might have if you're a local provider, say, in you know, in Germany, where there are very different privacy laws, you might be able to provide a service specifically to companies in Germany who wouldn't be able to touch Amazon Web Services.
Oh, yeah. Or if you need, like, a HIPAA compliance, it's like a little niche
right.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you're going to an event later today for VMware, right?
Yeah. So, well, I also think maybe Citrix is trying to steal the thunder a little bit here with the
I think 100%, because we don't know what this event from VMware is, but like, the rumor is it's that VMware is announcing vSphere 5 today,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, or has that been confirmed?
Pretty much everyone, yeah. There's in the sort of sneaky announcements that they've sent out to our analysts, they're kind of hinting that it's vSphere 5, yeah.
But so VMware is going to announce vSphere 5, and of course Citrix, like, this is like their big FU to them, right? Because
yeah.
it's like,
well, because vSphere 5 has nothing to do with the cloud, really. It's their, you know, it's their virtualization, their server virtualization stuff. you know, vCloud Director, and there are a bunch of other products that speak more specifically to the cloud.com stuff that ain't vSphere.
But are those all getting updated today too? Or
we don't know. We don't know.
But so this is, it's funny though, because Citrix could have announced they bought cloud.com like yesterday or you know, over the weekend or whatever.
Oh yeah, they're announcing the buzzworthy headline today of Citrix buying cloud.com.
But it's their MO, right? Because this is exactly what they did when they bought Xen, right? So on the day... Remember, it's the day that VMware went public. Mm-hmm. Citrix spends $500 million. Now, it wasn't real cash, but supposedly they spent $500 million on, you know, buying Xen. And every fucking article that was written about
that day
was like VMware was public. Also, Citrix throws down.
Yeah,
and this is the same shit again, I think.
Yeah, I wonder though how much of that yet has really translated into market share, eating into VMware's market share in this space. I mean, they're clearly a competitor, but you know, and have good technology, but you know, how much are they really crunching into VMware's data center business?
So and how much of this do you think this whole business anyway, like, is this even a like real, like, does VMware, is this all products that are announced that people are actually using, or is this all just kind of like in the future
cloud? It's in the future, yeah. So which, you know, does give you know, this open stack, and now, you know, what Citrix has with with cloud.com, it does give them you know, probably as good of a chance. You know, I mean, everyone besides Amazon Web Services now is just throwing shit at the wall and seeing what's sticking.
Do you think, so someone suggested earlier that maybe Citrix just bought the cloud.com for the domain name.
Yeah. So, yeah, we reckon it's at least 100 million or more.
I saw TechCrunch said 2 to 250, right?
Did so they? Yeah. Whoa, yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, so that's a lot for a
domain. Anyway, so I guess we can move on. Like, I, you know, this is something that is not 100% in our really area, but like, this is what, when I woke up today, that's what everything was saying. And Joe, I don't know if you've got stuff to do, I guess, right now.
Yeah, thank you. I've got to get to the VMware press conference, but thank you for having me on. And you guys, you know, call anytime if you want to chat about cloud stuff.
Yeah, it's cloudcovertv.com and search cloudcloudcomputing.com.
Mm-hmm. Thank
you. Yeah, all right. Thanks,
Cheers,
Joe.
Brian. Yep. Bye.
So that was cool because, like I said, I literally had never heard of cloud.com before. So, Joe, thanks for that. And we'll, you know, Joe and I occasionally talk about desktops in the cloud and that kind of stuff. So I think we'll definitely... you know, be able to do stuff like that more in the future.
Oh, heck, and you're in the Valley too, so there's all sorts of people within 10 miles of you that can come by and stop by and, you know, talk about all sorts of things with us.
Yeah, yeah. So incidentally, so someone's putting in a chat about Vue 5. So I haven't heard anything. Like, I don't think, so first of all, like Joe said, VMware's announcement today is not... we don't know what it's about yet, right? So, but I have not, I mean, I heard about, you know, vSphere and that sort of stuff, but I have not heard anything about Vue 5, so I don't think that today has anything to do with Vue 5. I don't know if you heard anything, Gabe.
No, what time is that meeting at, do you know?
What time is Justin? You're going over there, right? Like noon or something? Or yeah, he says noon.
Okay.
So now Vue 5, though, I think they're planning that for VMworld. Something new on Vue 5. I don't know though. I haven't heard anything about features for Vue 5. It is, there's still a lot of, I mean, Vue 4.6, you know, that's what added that security gateway, that added, I guess it took the local mode, you know, like out of beta and that kind of stuff. I don't know whatever they're working on. I don't know. Unless it's the persona stuff.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything either. So my fingers are crossed for Persona because I feel like that's the thing that people have been waiting for. I would imagine there's a lot of organizations that have their fingers crossed for a Persona and Windows 7 support and all of that.
Yeah, Windows 7 support's there in Vue 4. And I think Vue 4.5 had Windows.
Yeah. Okay.
So Gabe, a couple things I want to talk about with you. I was on vacation for the past couple weeks. And so I was kind of, you know, only sort of half paying attention to what was actually happening, like, while I was gone. And I know that you bought a Chromebook, and I saw your headline, which is like, I got a Chromebook, but I think I'm going to return it.
Man, I haven't returned it yet, but that's because I have a pile of stuff that has to go back to Amazon. So I have one more thing. Like, they've shipped me something that I've already decided to return. And so I have to wait for it to arrive before I just take this giant package of things to the post office to drop off. So it's... you know, it's just Chrome running on a netbook that costs $500, and I can get that for $200. So, it just wasn't worth it.
I mean, is that it? Like, it's as simple as that? I mean, it's just
more or less. I mean, yeah, of course, there's more to it to the Chrome OS, where they had to make it so that it was could run standalone on the hardware and such. But you know, the file browser was awful. The integration with SD cards that upload to Picasa and things like that, it wasn't very full featured. It actually kind of looked like it was thrown together. I realize it's a V1, and there's going to be, there always has to be the first version of something, but this first version of something is definitely not worth $500. Maybe for organizations. What I keep hearing is that I'm missing the point, and it's meant for organizations to use. I just don't see it, though.
So is the hardware okay? Like, is it the regular netbook off-the-shelf hardware, or is it an actual netbook, or is it a full-size laptop?
No, it's an actual.
So I used a netbook.
A little bit larger than a netbook.
So I tried a netbook before I had a MacBook Air, which I love the Air for two reasons. Because number one, it's got a full size keyboard, and number two, it's got a full size trackpad with like palm rest area. So the netbook that I had before that, it was like a 90% keyboard. And I'll tell you what, man, that 90% keyboard, I couldn't use it. I mean, I just could not type at regular speed on a 90% keyboard. And the trackpad on this netbook I had, I swear, was like an inch tall by like 2 inches wide.
There's the trackpad was definitely small, but the keyboard felt real. So I think the screen is large enough to support a full-size keyboard. And really, typing on it was fine. But if you try to go to YouTube or something, the video starts slow. And if you try to make it full screen, it gets jittery until it finally all catches up. And you can just tell it's barely powerful enough to do what it needs to do.
It kind of reminds me of so that goes back to like the Motorola Atrix. Remember that? And they're talking about like that the phone that plugs into the dock or whatever. And forget for a second the whole dock and like how much bullshit I think that is. But I mean, the aspect of like they show this Atrix and it's like, oh, you dock it with your, you know, you dock your phone with your laptop dock, and I swear it's like 30 seconds for this thing to come up online. I mean, like, you wait for it and your windows are redrawing, and then like it orients the screen, it's got change of resolution and like turn on, I don't know what it's doing. It's just, god, it was like such a party trick that took forever. And I guess the only way you would like that is if you're actually at a party and like a little bit drunk or something and you didn't notice that what was happening.
Well, and even with you know, these HTML5 clients to help you access Windows apps from Chromebooks and HTML5 clients, I mean, they're not they're complicated solutions right now. I mean, there's extra layers in there that need to be there, gateways and such that translate the RDP or HDX or whatever data to text-based data so that the browser can actually render that.
Wait, what?
Okay. So HTML5-based thin clients, this was my like companion article after I got the Chromebook. I learned how these worked. The way they work is there is a gateway.
Wait, so HTML5 clients, it's only – this is Aircom's got their client, right?
Right.
And but then Citrix is demoing one. Are you talking about one of these products versus the other, or both?
I do not know how Citrix works. There's another one called SparkView that's an independent guy that wrote an RDP client.
Good for him.
It works in the exact same way. But there's something called WebSockets that is a part of HTML5, and this allows you to open up one connection and stream data from it without normal HTTP type send, acknowledge, stop. So WebSockets is great and enables people to send data, but it's only text data. So the way that these HTML5 thin clients work is there's a gateway basically sitting on, you know, the server side that translates or re-encodes the RDP data into text-based data.
It's like a binary
data.
So it's like, but it is like a binary translation. It's just turning it into like ASCII translation, right? So
that's exactly what it's doing, right?
Oh wow!
It sends that then to the HTML5 client where there is a JavaScript, basically application running using another feature of HTML5 called Canvas that allows JavaScript to address every single pixel in the window independently.
That's
so
insane.
It actually takes that text data and draws every single pixel on the screen. And it looks really good.
Even on the Chromebook?
It looks, considering all that's happening, it looks pretty good. you can tell that there's a difference. And it just doesn't feel like RDP, or I guess all I've used is RDP. It just doesn't feel like that, but it really doesn't. All things considered, it looks fairly decent considering all that's going on in the background.
So is this JavaScript? Can you actually sort of access the source code? Like, I don't know, can JavaScript be compiled? Or when you download this thing, can you like look at it and then, you know, just change it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's a, you know, compiled app. Probably not. It's a script, right?
I don't know how that works, really.
Yeah.
So while we're talking about these devices and stuff, I don't know if I told you, I got a BlackBerry Playbook, and it was my intention. I don't know, like, I just figured, I mean, I have an iPad now, but this thing's smaller, so I guess I was thinking it could be like an iPad, and I would just, you know, use it just like a smaller iPad, basically. Although, ironically, I think it was actually more expensive than the iPad.
Aren't they like $600?
Yeah, it was a lot. But the thing is, so I get this thing.
You bought it with miles or something, right?
Like, yeah. I didn't pay for it, but I didn't pay money. But I don't know. Like, I thought I was gonna write an article on this. Man, this thing sucks so much. Like, it's I don't know if you saw my tweets. Like, it's weird because so it's a tablet and it's all awesome and it's kind of cool because you can use your fingers and like move out into the bezel and like, you know, the bezel is like a touchscreen area as well. It's BlackBerry. So and it runs like some multitasking OS and the interface is really awesome on everything. But it's BlackBerry, so there's no applications for it. So like there's no, you know, they had their own built-in Twitter and their own built-in like YouTube viewer, but like all the apps I actually used couldn't find them. And B, the craziest thing, there's no mail or calendar or contact app for it. So you're supposed to like pair it with your BlackBerry. It's almost like a thin client for your phone in some ways. And so I looked it up and they're like, yeah, well, you know, we just wanted to get that out there. I guess the problem is something because like a BlackBerry Enterprise server can only support like one device per mailbox or something, some crap like that. But you can't actually, like, you can't use it. I mean, there's no email on it, and there's no apps, there's no Hulu, there's no Netflix, there's no nothing, and no email, and no, you know, nothing like that. I don't know, I give it to Justin, so, which, you use it for what? What'd you say? Movies. He watches movies on it.
Oh, so, at least it has a media player.
And he said it plays more formats than the iPod or the iPad does. So that's cool. And I guess you can probably just drag and drop files onto it. You don't have to deal with like iTunes and synchronizing and all that crap. But I don't know. So I guess there's a bunch of other, you know, sort of like tablet slate things coming out. There's not even a Citrix client for this Playbook thing. There we go. Yeah, hey, so let's take a look at the chat. I sort of forgot about that. It's a 10 to 12 inch Air. I use a 10 inch Air. Incidentally, on the MacBook Air, I'll say real quick. So my old laptop was a MacBook Pro i7 dual core, like, I don't know, 4-8 gigs of RAM. It's like three. I don't know what it was. It was big and fast. And when I get the MacBook Air, I was kind of afraid that because like the benchmarks on the MacBook Air were like half the speed of the benchmarks for my MacBook Pro. So I kind of thought that the Air was going to kind of suck and I would use it only as my...
But they were equal to our old MacBook Pros, the 2008 era non-unibody ones.
Yeah. The one that I lobbied to our boss that we had to replace because it was like, we did too much shit. Like, we needed faster computers. Although, to be fair, that was before Justin. So we were actually like rendering stuff on our own laptops and everything. But that's the thing. So I'm no longer rendering anything on my laptop and I don't have a VM. So since Office 2011 came out and it has like the real version of... Well, it still gets based on Entourage roots, but it's like called Outlook and seems to be better than what Entourage was. I just run Outlook natively, so I don't need it. I don't need the VM anymore. So no VM, no video editing. So I'm a user now. You know, like my apps are Office and Chrome. But on the MacBook Air, even though it's only like 1.6 gigahertz, whatever, I can still have like 50 Chrome tabs open across four windows. It's fine, full speed, off. It's like all that kind of stuff. So what I kind of realized is like, yeah, it's half as fast, but I was never stressing the limits of my MacBook Pro anyway. So maybe that just means like, I don't know how you would phrase it. Like, okay, so before maybe as I was doing whatever I do all day long, I was using like 10% of the computer and now I'm using 20% because the computer is like only half as fast. That's MacBook Air. I'm really happy with it.
I'm tired of hearing about it.
Okay, yeah. So
I like look, my MacBook Pro.
Okay, VDI and SMB. Let's talk about this. And I know we're kind of behind. Just looking at a couple of stuff on the it's hard to read and talk at the same time.
Yeah, it is.
That's you what know, this is.
So my first thought when you say VDI and SMB, my first thought is Kavisa.
Yeah.
I mean, just hands down, it's so freaking easy to stand up. I swear, if you have 2 free hours this afternoon, you can be provisioning desktops with Caviza. I hope that Citrix takes it and does something with it and leverages how cool that is.
You know what I say though? Like, so, okay, SMB, VDI, you say Caviza? I don't know, man. Like, am I building that shit myself? Like, if you say SMB, if you say VDI for SMB, I think I'm going hosted.
You could actually, you know, Shane Tech Mark says, sure, use Zenap. So evaluate whether you need VDI, of course. But then, you could be right, use hosted. I'm telling you, you haven't done Caviza. It's ridiculously simple if you want to have this stuff in-house.
But I can't, and you know, this kind of goes back to like, so as I was setting up, and like, this is stupid. I know we're talking about, like, you and me, Gabe, we're all about, even though we focus on desktops, we're still, you know, thinking about virtualization and cloud and everything like that. But when I'm setting up, even when I was looking at this, we wanted to do the show live. We were looking at servers and server requirements and hosting, and then we realized we can do Amazon and pay them, you know, $1 an hour or whatever to run our server for the hour that we need it. I mean, why would anyone buy a server ever again? And especially if you're SMB and especially if you're running desktops. So, I mean, obviously, you know, because the thing is, because like Caviza is VDI only, right? So, like, one of my things is a lot of times I'm not a fan of VDI because of the limitations, because you've got slower connections or you need offline or whatever. But what I wonder about though is like, so that's all fine. But like, you know, in that case, if you decided the VDI works for you, like if Caviza would work for you, then I would think also that a hosted company would work for you. And I did an article a few weeks ago about like, you know, the hosted desktops, like desktops as a service, desktops in the cloud. So it was like, you know, originally it was Desktone, but now we have, I feel like Desktone was like the first one that kind of really started trying to sell desktops direct, but Citrix partnered with Rackspace, and we've got like now, you know, CSC and WePro and IBM and Dell, like everyone is doing this kind of stuff. And I just can't, I don't know, man. Like, if I'm SMB, there's no way that I'm putting in my own servers to run freaking desktops. If I'm going to run a desktop on my desktop and do it the old way, fine. But if I'm putting that shit on a server, man, I'm never buying a server again. If I'm SMB, I don't think I own any servers. Even our company,
yeah,
by the way, with 600 people.
What if you do? What are you going to do? Just throw out your old stuff?
Yes.
If you already have the hardware, you're not going to invest in something, you know, and throw that stuff away.
Hey, I'm looking around this room. I'm looking around this room of all the shit I can throw away right now. What is that? Do we need that?
I know plenty of MBs that bought hardware and are still just sitting on it, and they could use it with this kind of thing.
But
really,
for what? Like, how long does it take them? Dude, this, we're talking like $1 a user a month. $12 a, no, $1 a day. Oh, wait, that's a little bit more.
Yeah.
$360 a year. Still, though, you can't, I mean, I don't know.
$360 a year compared to, I already have the hardware and all I have to do is buy the licensing for a $120.
Come on, your old hardware, give me a break.
$120 a seat, $130 a seat for Caviza.
Per year.
Concurrent.
Per year.
Concurrent.
Per year.
With maintenance.
Per year.
It's 20% maintenance. It's $135, I think.
I would check your numbers.
I would just go and look at the website.
If I do that, I'll move away from the chat and then I'll lose everything and then I'll like be way off. Dude, I think there's no way. Because the thing is, like, so you have this, look, this old hardware you have laying around is like going to run all your desktops and it's going to be all awesome. Come on. Like, what is your old hardware? What's my old hardware? It's like a dual core Xeon.
That's fine. But if you still get these overall costs here, you're looking at $365 per person per year versus. That's per named person now. We're talking, you know, so now versus $130, $135, whatever, per concurrent user for the first year plus 20% maintenance after that.
So,
that's a lot of hardware.
I don't know. I'm hosting it. Like, SMBs out there, you know, and look, I mean, if you guys think about it, for those out there who are like VDI experts and provide services to SMBs, you know, then you can if they're hosted, it's just way easier for you to deal with, and I don't know, you can make a few nickels on the reselling of these hosted services. I use this analogy so much about like, you know, you need whatever, like a hole in the head. So amongst the holes you need in your head include running your own VDI for SMB. How big is SMB? I don't know. Like, let's say like 100. I don't know. Frankly, though, I mean, our company has 600 people. I don't know why we own any servers. I don't know why anyone less than like, I don't know. I don't know why anyone who's not Amazon or Apple owns their own servers anymore. Like, this is, I think in 5 years, it's going to be like laughable that we actually own our own servers.
I don't know. We've got a lot of websites. So Tech Target does as a whole. But yeah, I get you.
Yeah,
maybe it's their own homegrown, you know, the platform and all the modifications and things like that. There's reasons for this.
Man, I could run whatever. I don't think, like, if I'm an SMB, man, get the hell.
You spent the last 2 days in EC2. That's why you're thinking like this.
But the thing is, though, like, so remember, VDI is not cheap, right? So, like, if I'm an SMB and you have desktops, just keep on using your desktops, you know? Like, I wouldn't, like, if I've got laptop users or actual traditional desktops, I don't know that I would change that right now. I'd probably just buy them Windows 7 desktops, let them run for another 5 years, and then we'll see what the industry did in the meantime. But if I decide I need VDI, I mean, even though Kivitz is easier, I'm still dealing with disk image. I don't know. Then you got to deal with HGX. I don't see it. And if you need remote access, you know, LogMeIn is free. So give them traditional desktops. If they have an actual literal physical traditional desktop, they can access it remotely from the golf course with LogMeIn. And I think we're done.
Ryan G, I think that's Ryan Gallier from Citrix IRC, says he wonders why Kivisi is so much easier than Zen Desktop, because it takes only 5 minutes now to stand up a DDC and a couple of VMs. And Ryan, that's a really good point. And actually, now that Citrix owns Kivisi, it's probably worth doing a head-to-head. So, you know, look for that after Bri form.
No, that's bullshit, because they wouldn't have bought Kivisi if they didn't.
I know. That's why I'm going to do it.
I mean, look.
I didn't say you're going to do it. Don't worry.
Hey,
I
tried. Man, Zen Desktop 5, there's... When they talk about it's like easier to install, that is like because they built a bigger wizard on the install. Like Zen Desktop 5 is no more simple than Zen Desktops before it, right? It's just that now it has this easy install wizard, which, by the way, only works if you're doing like everything exactly in their own way. And it's like, you know, it creates a group tree, it creates everything. But I feel like that's cool for a demo environment. But the reality is, because even when I did that head-to-head VDI testing, I couldn't use their easy install wizard. Like I did it and I'm like, wow, this is set up not at all like I can actually use it. So I ended up tearing it all apart and rebuilding myself anyway, which, by the way, took me like 4 days to get it took me 4 days to get Zen Desktop 5 running from my single one user, single server environment. Now,
yeah, maybe, it's already gone off the screen, but somebody asked how that went.
Maybe that makes me a dumbass. So, well, you know, I think what they asked is when was I going to write the article to follow up? And it's kind of funny because the mistake I made with that is I kind of said, you know, I'm going to do a really good job, write an awesome article, and like it's gonna be, you know, really, really awesome. And so, of course, that just means it's been on my, you know, to-do list since.
Yeah, and you've now forgotten your experience.
No, I took notes. Oh, I did not forget.
You took notes?
Well, these are, I don't know if I can publish, you know, I should just publish these notes. There's a lot of, do we have a beeping sound here? A bleeping? I said no FCC, so we can say whatever we want. let me talk about that. Cause I get asked that a lot at the shows we do. So I did, this is February and March. And I said what it was going to be, you know, like head to head, like Zen Desktop versus Vue. But to be honest, it was just me. And I was connecting to a persistent desktop that I owned where I had admin rights, and I just kept it running all the time. So in some ways, it was more about testing like HDX versus PC over IP than it was actually testing like Zen Desktop versus Vue, because I wasn't getting into provisioning and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Although I guess I did test the whole stack. I went through, you know, secure gateway or secure access, Citrix access gateway and web interface and everything. And with Vue, I use a Vue connection server to proxy. But I'll say my experience is this. And first of all, by the way, I am not the right use case for VDI because I, you know, am always mobile and I'm just... I mean, there's a lot of time on airplanes and everything, so it's actually kind of funny because I got different hardware also. So I got some Y Zenith Zero clients, got some HP Thin clients. The hardware I end up using most is this HP laptop running Windows 7 embedded, which I just installed. I just turned off the write filter. Basically, used. I mean, like it's kind of cheating, but I mean,
I have one of those in my garage.
Maybe I had Dropbox client installed on my thin client. I'm making air quotes with my fingers now, but I'll say that. So I'm not the right guy for VDI, right? But I'll say that it was cool. Here's the thing. So first of all, HDX versus PC over IP, they're fine. They're really both fine, and I can find examples of where HDX is awesome and where PC over IP looks like the biggest joke that a bunch of kindergartners put together. And I can find use cases where PC over IP like freaking rocks, and you're like, how is the whole world not using PC over IP? Why would anyone buy Citrix? And frankly, you can, I mean, sometimes it was network conditions, sometimes it's like where I was and what I was doing, sometimes it was just like the will of the force of the universe, I don't know. I will say, and this is what led me to that article. I will say this, now granted, this is a few months ago, but Citrix has way more clients. Like there's more different platforms supported for HGX. Like that was kind of like a real thing that sort of affected me directly. Although to be fair, I could use, there's RDP clients that, it can connect to Vue, of course, with RDP. But the problem is these RDP clients, well, the Wise Pocket Cloud is Vue aware, but the other ones weren't Vue aware, so I couldn't connect through my Vue connection server, so I had to open a route to the internet to connect to RDP directly back to my desktop if I'm doing it with a regular RDP client. So that wasn't really I could do that with Citrix or VMware or just like regular desktop, so the thing I didn't like about Vue, the thing I didn't like about PC over IP was, that Vue connection server, like they've got like their own like connection broker, right? But that does not use, that is not SSL. Vue is using whatever port it uses, like PC over IP is like, it's like UDP 55 something, 59, I forget what it was right now.
That's a geek out question.
Yeah, well, I would not know the answer off the top of my head, but the thing is, Vue, here's the thing, that port is not open everywhere. Like in our office, and I don't know whether it's like we have like asinine, crazy 1970s style policies for IT departments, but like probably. I could not connect to Vue from our office unless I like put a help desk ticket in. And the other problem I had is this also happened when I was going to hotels. So a lot of times when you go to hotels and it says like you have to buy internet access and it's like, like $9.95 per night for like, quote basic access, and it's $19.95 for advanced/VPN. You have to use the advanced/VPN option. So that kind of sucks. And obviously I could have put this behind like an F5, like SSL VPN, but we've written about this before. Then I'm taking my my great UDP traffic, which is awesome, from PC over IP. I love that PC over IP uses UDP, but then we're wrapping it in TCP, so we're wrapping the reliability around it and the overhead that we don't really need, and it just kind of depends. I don't know. It doesn't end up as cool. So, but at the end of the day, though, I feel like PC over IP is fine. I feel like HGX is fine. I like there's more clients for Citrix, but I don't know. I think they're both fine. So I guess I should write that up at some point.
We've got people are talking a lot about storage. Man, that whole time you were talking, we got people talking about storage in the chat room. Man, moving from one thing to the next.
Better than listening to me.
It looks like there's a lot of members from Citrix IRC out here. I called out Ryan Gallier before, and I think I saw Shane Tech Mark, and so a lot of Citrix IRC guys in here. Have you even checked out Citrix IRC yet? I wrote an article about it yesterday.
Yeah, I did, because I did it when Ryan. So we met Ryan at Synergy here in San Francisco like a month or 2 months ago, whatever it was, and I was like, man, IRC. I don't want to have some like stupid old text client that has like standard width fonts and it's going to be green and like it's going to be weird. It's going to be like using like the Aerocom console. and I don't.
That may be different now. We don't know.
I just don't want some like old weird looking thing. Like I got chat and it looks nice and I got IRC and I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, man. Like you need to. You're being a dumbass right now. He didn't say that, but that's what he was intimating. And
he was thinking of that.
Yeah. And he's like, there's a web client. You don't even have to like log in. You just go connect, and it's awesome.
Yeah, it's not like you have to dial into Freenet anymore to get to it.
Literally dial in.
Right. I just wrote an article about him. The if you go to join.citrixirc.com, you can check this thing out yourself. And actually, maybe it might be all Citrix IRC people in the chat room or that are listening to this right now. So maybe maybe you already know this. But what's that?
So. The thing is, yeah, so someone asked, like, why not just use Citrix IRC chat for this show, for the chat for the show? And I'll say two things. First of all, I didn't want to, like, just come in and, like, take over. I don't want to just put that IRC client on our website and then have, like, everything that, like, they might be having, like, actual conversations that they prefer to have without, like, two jackasses.
Yeah, like, actually helping people.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is, like, I don't know, I know Ryan said that, like, they're not just like Citrix anymore, but I still feel like it's hard. Like if we say, oh, it's like, you know, Brian and Gabe talking live and chat about it on Citrix IRC, that's going to feel like it's either sponsored by Citrix or it's like only talking about Citrix or whatever. So I don't know if they're ever going to change Citrix IRC to like VD IRC, maybe not desktop IRC, whatever. But it's like, that was the thing. But I will say though, I do like that Citrix IRC exists, and I did check it out a few, like, so I checked it out over the weekend when I was like thinking about maybe using it for the chat for this thing, and like, man, at 2 a.m. Pacific time on like Saturday night, there's still half a dozen people in there, kind of like there's no one there, you know, you can just like be like hello and people are like hey and it doesn't, you're right, it's 24/7. So I think that's my
I posted yesterday as a joke, I said I can't print, end of details, and and somebody, I think it was Jerry and Gibson, was like, Gabe, you can't print? So even though I was joking, they were still like so willing to help out and
deploy.
Man, I just, you know, so if you're listening, you haven't heard it, you didn't read the article yesterday, go check it out. And keep it in mind, you know, if you have support problems in the future. Because it's a hoot and holler chat room, you know, you just hop in and hoot and holler, it's like a purchasing, like a stock grabbing kind of line. You just pick it up and talk. And that's cool. And that's what this is like. So, yeah, highly recommend it.
Incidentally, Gabe and I are connected right now via Skype. That's how we're getting the audio together. So it's our idea that when we do these shows in the future that we'll either allow people to come in live via Skype or even for other caller, like even for other guests. So I'm thinking, like, I don't want to turn the show into, like, an interview show necessarily. I don't want to do vignettes on, like, little individual companies. But there's a lot of people who, you know, I meet with, especially here in the Bay Area, who are just – they're just, we have these conversations that are just awesome. And I'm like, I wish we were doing this, you know, and being able to share it. So I think that we can have the two of us and maybe sort of randomly, regularly, I don't know, just get like a guest in with us who can just chat about, you know, whatever we're talking about and whatever people want to talk about. I think that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, this is a fun rig too. This is, you know what my favorite part about this whole radio show thing? It's live. Okay, so that's number one. But number two is that if it weren't for conferences, I would never, ever, ever have to shave. and I mean, come on, we got Bryform coming up. So I shaved like 3 days ago because it was my birthday and I was going out. And now, you know, in like a week, I might shave for Bryform.
If it's your birthday, doesn't that mean that you
should? Going out with friends and.
It wasn't your wife's birthday. I mean.
Yeah, but she kind of made the look like I should shave.
Right, right. Well, I mean, you chose to shave on your own because you love her.
Let's go with that.
She didn't make any looks.
Yeah.
Look, a lot of people are talking about storage, though, as you were saying in this chat. It's funny because I've written this before. Like Citrix, so Zen Server IntelliCache, I think is an awesome feature, and I don't know how much you know about IntelliCache. This is that thing where it's a feature of Zen Server that's exposed to Zen Desktop, and it basically allows you to have like your master disk images on like a regular network share, and then they're downloaded sort of like, you know, block level sort of like downloaded as they're needed, but they're cached on each of your actual VM hosts. But then you can have but then that cache can be shared by multiple virtual machines. So it's kind of like Citrix Provisioning Server, sort of, except it's actually, you know, the problem with Citrix Provisioning Server was it was designed in the days like way before, before virtualization. So Citrix Provisioning Server identifies clients based on MAC address and like custom bootstraps and all that kind of stuff. IntelliCache is actually built into the hypervisor and can just make it so that multiple machines share a disk image. It works really fast. So you can have multiple VM hosts, each with, you know, dozens, hundreds, whatever, of VMs. And then you can have like your master file image just sitting on a network share. So it's cool. The problem is it requires Zen Server. So it's something that maybe no one uses. I don't know.
Well, that's one of the reasons why we've always said when people ask us what hypervisor should they use for desktop virtualization? That's why, you know, if IntelliCache is a win for you, then evaluate Zen Server at least. You don't have to do vSphere ESX just because that's what you're already using for your servers, you know? So it's always worth taking a look at Zen Server. It's just that not that many people use it right now.
Although I guess, like I was talking to Steve Greenberg in Arizona with their consulting company, he was saying that the number of Zen desktop deployments they're doing on Zen Server is now their number one, that's the number one platform for Zen Desktop now.
I mean, especially for places where it's new, and I mean, it's cheap.
It's well, yeah, and even
the price is right.
But you even get to pay for support and everything when you're buying Zen Desktop anyway. The thing that's interesting about IntelliCache though is so I've always been saying that like the handwriting is on the wall for provisioning server, right? Because IntelliCache and provisioning server do not do the same thing, and I kind of thought that like maybe Citrix was going to like get rid of provisioning server because provisioning server is awesome, but it is based on like physical machines booting, and it's not something that is like it just doesn't really make sense necessarily. And I think provisioning server you're still supposed to put out like on a physical host, and it just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that you know when Citrix was putting Zen Desktop together, they needed something that could stream the OS, and they already had provisioning server, so they just made it part of the solution. And then you know in the meantime, they've built something that solves the problem better.
Yeah, now here's the thing, though. So, but provisioning server, like, I think the handwriting is on the wall, but they just announced provisioning server version 6, right?
I think that product just may not have a home at Citrix, you know? That it could spin out still.
Well, for physical desktops, it's awesome, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there's still, DoubleTake Flex is still a viable product that does the same thing, except just it's not part of Citrix. And you can use it for desktops right now because provisioning server, there is not a desktop version available.
Right. And Wise. Wise has their own streaming manager too.
Oh, right.
No one that does that.
Yep.
But here's the thing though. So to me, Citrix IntelliCache, right now it only supports shared disk images. Or I should say the benefits it gets are about multiple VMs that are accessing the same shared image on your NAS or whatever, on your network server, and then that shared image is being cached down. But as you know, I feel like no one should be using shared images with VDI. Because I feel like if your VDI environment is simple enough that shared images work, then you should just use Terminal Server and Zen App and be done with it and get like the same functions for like you know one third of the amount of hardware. So I'm all over. So like IntelliCache, I love as a concept, but I think IntelliCache has to evolve. And I haven't seen this. So Zen Server 6 beta is out and PBS 6, I think it's beta, or maybe the product is released, I can't remember, but we're on V6 for both these products, but I still don't think we have actually like IntelliCache for different VMs, or for different disk images, because it would be cool if you could do like block level caching or something like that, and have each user has his or her own like unique VM, but if it sees a block across the network that it needs, it could somehow share. I don't even know if that's architecturally possible, but it seems to me like that's what needs to happen with IntelliCache, and then once that happens, you know, then you don't need provisioning server anymore in your data center.
Not for virtual desktops.
Right.
And so PVS still, a lot of people still use PVS across their data center for not, you know, Citrix.
Or to stream the actual hypervisor.
Right. That's true. So there is still plenty of use for PVS, and that's why I was saying about DoubleTake and you mentioned Wise. You know, those there's still a market for that kind of technology. It's just with regards to desktop virtualization, IntelliCache is, you know, seems to be the direction that we're going to start heading.
It'd be cool though if they combined like the functionality provisioning server and IntelliCache and at least got them to like use the same images or whatever. Because then you could do that. Did I have that you said?
No, I said that may happen.
Oh yeah,
That would be a good idea if they were going to keep provisioning server. Because otherwise, if provisioning server is going to be off on an island, there's almost no reason for Citrix to keep it.
Well, yeah, but then because like Citrix, like we've criticized Citrix in the past for sort of like ignoring traditional, like physical hardware. Like this is a playbook right from VMware, right? Where VMware was all over like just pretending like physical didn't even exist anymore and like everything's virtualized. And their solution when everything hasn't been virtualized has not been to support the physical. Their solution has been to try to convince people to virtualize even more. But I feel like Citrix is starting to go down that path too, where it's almost like it's weird. Like it's almost weird to me that Zen Desktop still supports streaming disk images to physical desktops because it just seems like so out of their, like everything they're doing is about virtualization, you know? And maybe like what would PVS, like I almost imagine them like in their world, they only use PVS to like stream down Zen client or something like that. And then everything still runs as a VM.
I mean, yeah, I guess that's viable. I hadn't really thought of it that way. You know, it's all of these things are just kind of different uses for what we can turn these products into in the future. Sounds as good as anything else.
Yeah, and someone's writing like IntelliCache should also use local memory. Sorry, this a few minutes ago. Instead of the drive, which I agree. That'd be awesome. It's funny. Like we opened the show by talking about SMB VDI, and they were talking about storage and stuff like that. There's a company that's launching something new called Pivot 3. Have you heard of them, Gabe?
No.
So these guys, I actually met with them last week. And let me see, I got the guy's card here. It's, let's see, Pivot 3, Suzanne, let's see, Lee Caswell is their, like, found one of their co-founders. So Lee was actually one of the first marketing people at VMware. He worked for Diane, like, back in the early 2002, 2003. And then he went off to co-create this company. They do, so they're called Pivot 3. They're a storage company, but the primary market right now has been, like, video storage for, like, surveillance cameras, which is, like, huge amounts of storage. And so, like, their customers are, like, you know, casinos and a lot of, like, police departments that have cameras in the cars and it's always recording and that kind of stuff. So they built this like storage infrastructure where they take off the shelf hardware, although they actually resell the hardware. So it's like, you know, like they OEM Dell hardware or whatever. So you buy it and it's like a Dell rack, but it's like really like, you know, their it's their own sort of software. But anyway, so so you buy from them like these 1U or 2U or whatever servers that have storage, but then they have all their software, and it's kind of like, you know how Caviza is like VDI in a box, like you just plug in an extra frame, an extra server, and they just like hook up and start like talking to each other. They had the same kind of thing. Like they have like their version, it's like a RAID across servers. I think they actually call it like RACE or something like that.
Didn't eGenera, is that the right, the blade frame?
Yeah,
back in the day.
Yeah, well, they're kind of a different thing. So they're, and eGenera still is around. They're doing all in software and just partnering with like I think Dell and IBM now or something like that. But yeah, where they had like you plugged in, they had cards you plugged in that had processor and memory, and you plugged them in, and they had this thing called like the processor area network. And so like you could have one chassis. It's almost like blades, plugging blades into a chassis, except each blade instead of being a discrete computer, had processor and memory resources you could map and then carve up on your own. So it's like blades with like variable boundaries sort of. But what Pivot 3 is doing is, so they've got, so you're basically buying like this 1U appliance, this full of hard drives, and then you can buy like two of them for redundancy. And then you need more space, you buy a third one and just plug it in, and it just automatically figures it out. So automatically like stripes data across all three and gives you like the parity or redundancy or whatever. So think of exactly what you have with RAID, but it's like with RAID, I don't know what it, like, RAID 5 or RAID 10, raids. Whatever. Yeah, exactly. And so, but the idea is that it's scalable, and then they automatically like restripe when you plug in new hardware. So like you're running out of space. So you have a whole stack of these things with like whatever terabytes, and you're running out of space, and you just add another one in, and then they automatically restripe across that new one. So they give you the redundancy, and then of course you get all this, the sort of like aggregate scalability across all the spindles you have in all your things.
And I love how dynamic that is too, where, you know, if you just plug it in and it restripes everything on the fly, that's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, there's that's a no downtime node. You just decide to add more capacity and boom, there you go.
Yeah, although like, I don't know, I'm nervous about I guess I understand why they have to do it, but like, I wonder how long it takes to like restripe. You know what I mean? Like, you plug in. I mean, you got these things full of drives, and you plug in, you know, chassis number 6. Is it like, well, go home for the weekend, and we'll have full speed and full capacity? Although maybe as long as they do this in the background. So what if it takes you a week to get all the data over there?
Yeah, as long as the performance doesn't degrade.
But where I'm sort of going with this is so in their environment, the hard drives are like, they're kind of like they're selling storage. They're a storage company, right? But when you buy servers like from Dell, these chassis they're using, there's like CPU and memory in there that they're basically not using. Like they can't buy a server small enough to actually use up all the CPU and memory in the thing. And so I don't know if it's from these guys or a customer or whatever. They're like, hey, we got excess capacity in there. Can't we just like run some VMs in there? Because you know it's there anyway. Like we already have some extra space. And so they are, so they're going after the VDI market now, where you actually use their things as servers. So imagine like VDI servers with local storage, and you're buying these branded as Pivot 3, although they're actually, like I said, Dell, you know,
I don't know why the hell you would do this. I don't know why you just wouldn't put your VDI in the cloud.
Well, this is, dude,
yeah,
wait, are
burn.
No. This is exactly what I said to them. Are you trying to be a dick to me? Or are you like,
yeah,
you
I
actually
am.
Think that? Yeah. But I believe it though. This is exactly what I said to them, because I said two things. So they got this, and their whole thing is like, so you can run like, you know, they got a configurator and like a cost analysis, and don't get me started on that. But like, I like, you know, they deserve an attaboy. They're one of these companies who has like kind of cool technology, and I want to like give them like a hand, like a handshake, like tap on the back, like, I will buy you a beer because what you do is awesome. I'm not sure how you're going to make money on this, but I think it's awesome. I think of this as a Ring Cube also, to be honest. And so they, so you, you know, you buy this thing with like 50 users or whatever, and then you, you know, have all these VMs and they're running, and that's fine. And then you like need more VMs, and you just like plug in another server, and it gives you that much more VM capability, but also like the storage just kind of like automatically scales stripes, etc. And they can route, you know, like they have their own system, so they've basically got like a service VM that they run that kind of handles all the IO and everything. So if one of them if you lose a node, obviously you lose the VMs that are running on that node, but then you wouldn't you know, you wouldn't lose the storage and all that kind of stuff. So to me, I feel like Pivot3, so two things. Number one, I like them with Caviezo, right? Because what's crazy about Caviezo...
But you don't like either of those things.
Okay, if anything with Pivot3, I like them with Caviezo. Okay. So like, Now, I don't know if Citrix wants to get into the server selling business, but like, or maybe Pivot3 can get out of the server selling business, and they can just... you know, become like, they can just sell their software like as a virtual appliance and have an HCL with pre-certified, you know, list. They said the main thing is the reason they sell appliances is because they have to like the drives have to be the same like controller or architecture or something like that. So they need to sort of control it more. But if they told people like, hey, as long as you can buy these same drives and controller and buy whatever hardware you want, I don't know. But anyway, so like I like them as a concept. Like, I think they're cool technology. I think like if I had Caviezo on their hardware, that would rock. So I think like if I had to build a VDI environment myself, maybe it's Pivot3 hardware, maybe it's Caviezo software, and that's kind of cool. But to your other point though, this is what I told them. I said, because he's like we're going out to SMB space and we're just launching right now. They're going to launch in like a few. I forget the launching of VMworld. It was clear that we're like. Nothing we talked about was off the record, so I'm not like, I don't think I'm screwing them there. You know, he says like we want to go after SMBs, and that's why I'm like, man,
see,
I don't know.
I don't know that the SMBs are as enlightened as you are in their thinking here, you know?
Which is why there's no way they're running Caviezo. They're going to Desktone or IBM.
No,
or Dell,
I don't think they are.
I
don't think that they're thinking your way. I think that they're thinking a traditional way. I think that they're not out there, and they don't trust these things from outside. When everything they rely on to run their business, okay, if they don't have these things running, their small business is way more impacted than a large organization.
But Google Docs, man, like Google Docs is made for small business.
Google Docs sucks.
Who can write? I mean, Google Gmail, whatever, right? We can't run. Man, freaking TechTarget's email was down again. VMware's email was down for a day last week, right?
Well, Zimbra, but come on. I mean, yeah.
But no, I mean, look, I don't believe that private company can run email as reliably as
I'm not
Google
saying
can.
Email. Dude, we're not talking about email. We're talking about desktops. We're talking about the things that the users use every single day, the apps they use every day, the interface they use for those apps every single day. We're talking about that. We're not talking about email. We're not talking about services. We're talking about the thing they access all of that stuff with.
But I guess
and
that's the question.
I'm fine taking those apps and putting them out in the cloud, but the actual desktop itself, I want to own that if I'm a small business right now. I realize that in the future it may change and that these solutions are out there and they're growing. But right now, if I'm a small business, you know, IT guy, I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to put what I can out into the cloud, a few apps here and there. Email is a great idea. But these desktops, I think I still want to own these.
I want to know about people out there. Who's got small business customers? Well, I guess now you're out there and you got small business customers. I guess you're, you know, like consulting for them. So you don't want to consult yourself out of a job. But I don't know, man. I don't know. I guess I can't ask around here because it's San Francisco. So maybe there's more, like people are more advanced here. I just don't think that people want to deal with that crap. Like if they're running a small business, like who knows? Like how, I don't know. Someone comes to them, it's like $1 a month. You go to a browser, you type it in, you got your desktop, it's still Windows. You can install whatever you want. Sorry, $1 a day. $1 a day per user. I don't know. I just don't, God, I just can't. Like my point is like if the small business is enlightened enough to go to Caviezo or Pivot3 or build their own VDI, I think they're also enlightened enough to go to one of these external hosters.
Yeah, but you're limiting. You're talking about S. I mean, you're talking about small businesses. Medium businesses still have, you know, big ass packages that they have to run. They have line of business apps that are just critical to the entire place, accounting, management.
Even that stuff's going. All that's going in the cloud now.
Yeah, but they have. They're not going to move it there when they've invested hundreds of thousands of dollars to have what they have already.
But that's
not
stupid.
Going to move that stuff to the cloud.
What?
That's stupid. What are you eight? That's.
Hey, but, come on! Like it's.
But no, come on now. If 2 years ago your company invested $300,000 into an application that manages all of your inventory, shipping, receivings, all that stuff, accounting, everything, are you going to just abandon that and drop it off into the cloud? No, you're going to sit there and leverage it for the next 20 years if you can.
You can leverage yourself out of a business then.
I don't think you are. These guys are not as nimble and as agile, and they don't want to be as the big companies.
Yeah.
These guys are just they're happy to rest on their laurels. It's the benefit of being a small and medium business.
The benefit of the small medium business is that we can rest on our
your solution spends more money
on our laurels, right? Yeah. So let me ask you, and I guess so. It can like because I guess I can keep on going back to us. So we have at Tech Target, we have 600 people, I think, and I guess we run our own email servers and we run our own everything. Maybe it goes back down to a cost thing. But
what's Tech Target? Is Tech Target a medium business?
Yeah, I would say like most. I guess everyone's definitions change. Small is, I'd say, 50, 100 people. I'd say up to, under 1,000 is, kind of medium, and then bigger it gets to enterprise. Because when you're under 1,000, you still have, kind of the old way of thinking. Like, everyone's kind of does everything a little bit, within the IT department. Like, look at our IT department, So it's, we have people who have different jobs, but, they all kind of...
Yeah, and the Tech Target use case is different than other companies, too. I mean, every single company is different. And the brand new small to medium business that's starting up today... Yeah, I'm with you, man. Let's put it all in the cloud. But the people that have been around and been doing business a certain way for a while, they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
And Tech Target's the same way. There's no reason that they would just drop everything and go off to the cloud for anything.
So let's change the subject here. We got 4 minutes left. And let me just look back on the chat. We're talking about cloud stuff.
And feel free to let us know, people that are listening, if an hour is way too long. Let us know, because right now it's just Brian and Gabe bitching at each other.
We've been, but the thing is,
I think
we've
been
doing that for 12 years.
Yeah.
And
now we're
so,
sharing it.
And now it's, okay, look, a couple other things. Did you see, so Gartner released their latest Magic Quadrant on hypervisors, because Citrix has been advertising
the most obvious Magic Quadrant ever.
I know, so guess what? It's a Magic Quadrant, and it's on hypervisors, and, VMware, Citrix, and Microsoft are all in the leaders quadrants. yeah, no shit. How much do we pay Gartner? And then everyone else is in that lower left quadrant, so that's it's, Oracle, and I don't even, Parallels, and whomever, else is there. And it's really? way to go. And, so Citrix is advertising like crazy, hey, we are now in the leaders, I guess they were in the leaders quadrant last year. Although I think, I don't know how much the actual positioning of the dot matters. So, if you actually look at the graphic, there are the leaders quadrant is a one square inch. And then you can be like VMware is the highest and the most to the right of the, so they have the highest in terms of vision and the highest on ability to execute. Citrix is, so VMware, even though all these companies are in the leaders quadrant, Citrix is, VMware is the highest. But Citrix is talking about how they're in the leaders quadrant, but I kind of think that Citrix actually went down a little bit. I don't know how much this dot actually matters. Maybe we can ask someone at Gartner, but I feel like Citrix's dot is the same where it was for vision, but they're a little lower with the ability to execute. So, I don't know, maybe cloud.com changes that. I'm not really sure, but it was just funny to me when I saw that they, all those were in the leaders. So,
apparently, Citrix is a little lower in their completeness of vision as well, because VMware is not only up higher, it's also further off to the right, which...
So they lose Simon Crosby, right? And then the vision goes out the window. By the way, so Simon goes to Bromium, right? Mm-hmm. You wrote about this when I was gone.
This has been the fastest 4 minutes ever.
So I will say this. So Simon, I think Peter Levine is involved in this. Is that the guy's name?
Ian Pratt.
Ian Pratt. So all the dudes.
Peter was the CEO of ZenSource. So yes. That's the relationship.
So they got a new company. It's called Bromium. They won't explain what it does, except it's about security of applications. It's somehow leveraging the security hardware such as vPro and these kinds of things. It's not a client hypervisor. And though day one, they announced this company with $9 million in funding. So immediately, with those three on board and $9 million bucks, we want to know what they do.
Yeah, I guess we have no idea. I wrote an article about it, but nobody really suggested anything other than what I suggested, which is I think it might have something to do with endpoint security, but or out-of-band management of VMs, that kind of a thing. But nobody suggested otherwise, but I'm not sure that I'm right, just because I know, like, you know, we know Simon. We know that that dude thinks about a mile and a half ahead of everybody else the time.
Let's try and get him on the show. He was we were hoping to get him a Bri Forum. He actually emailed us about going to Bri Forum, and we said, yeah, we can do a panel or something, but then he emails back and says, like, oh, I can't make it. So I don't know if that's a polite, like, oh, I'm busy, I got the thing. But I'm hoping that we can maybe get him on the show next week. And
Actually, last thing.
It's 9 o'clock, man. So we are out of time. So let's you know, we'll sort of like do a post analysis of this and see how this show went. We are going to try and do this thing live from Bri Forum next week, though. So we'll kind of see how that goes. Maybe in the future we can look at the player. We're going to try and get a new player built and stuff, but I think this is our first chance. So I guess I'll say to all of you who are listening, thank you for tuning in today. We're going to post this as a podcast immediately, as soon as we can, the MP3, and you can listen to it later. And we'll come back next week doing something live from Bri Forum in Chicago.
So, thanks.
Yeah, I guess that's it. All right, thanks a lot.
We have to work on signing off.
Yeah, yeah. All right, cue music now.